Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
Well, as we mentioned earlier, there was a strong aftershock in northern Japan today, fraying nerves, knocking out power, rattling buildings, and raising more questions about nuclear power plants. The business community has been rattled as well after last month's catastrophic earthquake and tsunami in Japan. Moody's Investors Service is already considering cutting the long-term credit rating of Toyota, and it's watching Honda and Nissan as well. All three car makers had to stop production in Japan after the March 11th quake, although Toyota has managed to restart a few assembly lines. Toyota is having trouble, though, shipping about 500 car parts, including for cars assembled in the U.S. And it's not just the car industry. Parts for iPhones and iPads and other electronics have been affected. In fact, many analysts say this is the most significant disruption they've ever seen in what's called the supply chain for consumer electronics. And they say it could go on for months. Our next guest says it does not have to be this way. Jeff Karenbauer is an expert on these issues. He's president of Insight, Inc., a supply chain solutions company based in Manassas, Virginia. And I asked him if disruption was inevitable after a natural disaster or political unrest like we're seeing now in the Middle East.
Absolutely. It's inevitable, and it recurs with disturbing frequency. There's really two kinds of disruption. One is natural disasters. Random acts of nature, as they're known in the business, and the other is a premeditated attack by an intelligent adversary, not just Al-Qaeda. Another example of that is the Long Beach dock strike earlier in the last decade, timed to occur just before the Christmas season. Massive disruption of incoming flows from the Far East.
And you prepare differently for those two categories?
In some ways you do, but in other ways it's pretty much the same thing. You are trying to identify potential risk, places where your supply chain is most vulnerable, and then preferably take mitigating steps before it occurs as opposed to trying to respond after the event.
So how many businesses would you say look at it like that and actually prepare to do something before something terrible happens?
A disturbingly small number. About 4 years ago, I read a report by Aberdeen, an analysis firm right outside of Boston, in fact. And their survey on that matter indicated that 13% of their respondents said they had a supply chain vulnerability plan in place. 13%. That's just a remarkably small, inexcusably small number.
So why wouldn't businesses be more prepared? It seems as if it's sort of common sense to do something like that.
It is. There's a whole lot of reasons. One is that there's still too small an understanding and appreciation of the impact of supply chains. It's gratifying to know that UPS is now running logistics commercials on TV. Those of us who've been in the business for a long time just can't believe we're hearing that word in the broadcast medium as part of a commercial. But over 850 MBA degree granting programs in the United States, I can name perhaps 12 good supply chain programs. So people are not trained. People going through programs really dislike having to study operations. They'd much rather study something like finance or marketing. Secondly, a good friend of mine says that structured activity drives out unstructured activity. Structured activity is going to meetings 5 to 8 hours a day, which is pretty common in corporate America these days, answering the phone, dealing with emergencies. If one doesn't know how to approach risk assessment and risk mitigation, it's an unstructured activity. It's an unstructured discussion. We can put it off till next week, next month, next year. We're betting that nothing will happen, but we know better. And perhaps one of the most disturbing reasons, in my view, is Wall Street. You're not going to get rewarded for risk mitigation steps because it's going to mean, perhaps only modestly, but it's probably going to mean some sort of increase in cost. Surprisingly, research has shown and practice has shown that for at least some of the risks, the mitigation steps are not costly at all. And in fact, it's kind of like when people do energy studies. They go in thinking, boy, this is going to cost me an awful lot, and they end up saving money because they identify all kinds of places where they've wasted too much money.
What do you think is the mood among folks who handle supply chain issues these days? You told us, I think, one of your clients is looking at shipping out of Beirut, Lebanon?
I was kind of stunned when I heard that. It turned out that for all sorts of cost and service reasons, because of some other ports that had been impacted, they decided to switch over to there. Now, I think it's kind of remarkable. That's hardly a stable part of the world. Maybe I could illustrate this point with a challenge I've given to our clients, and so far nobody's been able to meet it. Just a simple table or spreadsheet, if you will. List for me all your raw materials, then the quantity of each one used, say, over a year. Then it gets hard. Tell me the total sales of all the products that this raw material is a part of. They can't even do that. The next column is tell me the profitability of all the products that this raw material is part of. That's way out. And finally, tell me how many suppliers you have for that raw material. What I'm looking for is a raw material that's in 40% of the finished products by profitability. Right. And we have only one supplier in a third world country with an unstable government. That's inviting disaster. And it's inexcusable, absolutely inexcusable, to put a company, perhaps the entire enterprise, at risk like that. And in the automobile industry, we have a critical shortage now of a resin, which is absolutely crucial in electronics manufacturing. So now we're seeing fairly substantial impacts in the computer and cell phone industry. Over 90% of that resin is manufactured in Japan.
Could instability in other parts of the world make manufacturing in the United States more attractive to some businesses?
It already is. We are already seeing companies pull back from some of their outsourcing strategies. And they were ill-considered in the first place. Certainly supply chain folks were not in back of this. It was kind of a blind rush, lemmings going over the cliff, toward cheap labor rates. People are now waking up somewhat after the fact and saying, boy, you know, a 12,000-mile-long supply chain is pretty expensive. You mentioned Toyota. They were the originators of lean, lean methodology. And unfortunately, people have misinterpreted it and taken it far beyond what Toyota ever intended. And they've stretched their supply chains to the point where, you know, we worshiped at the altar of lean such that Plan B effectively disappears.
Jeff Karenbauer is an expert on supply chain issues. He's president of Insight, Inc., a supply chain solutions company based in Manassas, Virginia. Jeff, thanks for speaking with us.
Oh, you're quite welcome. It was my pleasure.